This is the third lecture of Unit 4, Component 2, on the classic clinical process that takes place in a patient-clinician interaction. The first two lectures discuss the process of gathering information, rearranging it into a conventional structure used in healthcare, and reorganizing it to make sense out of the data. That process concluded with a problem list. This lecture will discuss how clinicians arrive at a specific diagnosis to guide treatment. We concluded the previous lecture with this problem list, derived from analysis of information gathered about a man with swelling in his ankles, depicted on this slide. On the right, we see the beginnings of the differential diagnosis. Let's consider the weight gain and edema which the man reported. At the top right, we see that edema could be caused by conditions of different organ systems. Edema may result from heart disease, such as that caused by long-standing high blood pressure. It may also result from liver disease, such as cirrhosis, due to chronic alcoholism. It could also be a case of kidney disease, such as nephrotic syndrome, or, in some countries, edema like this might be the result of severe malnutrition, though this form would be rare in the United States. Moving down the slide, we see the differential diagnosis for shortness of breath or dyspnea. This condition may result from diseases of many organ systems, such as heart disease, lung disease, anemia or low blood count, physical restriction due to a large abdomen in obesity, or deconditioning due to inactivity. As we examine these lists, we can see that some conditions or categories of conditions exist on both lists, and these may be clues to what is wrong with this man. We also see some data that speaks to certain guesses about the condition in question, but this kind of reasoning will only take us so far in reaching an accurate diagnosis. In order to think about the problem in a more structured way, we need some rules and procedures. This slide lists categories of techniques or processes that are used by clinicians to help them think about diagnosis. These include systematic approaches that run through every organ system, such as the mnemonic vindicate. Another approach is the anatomic, in which a clinician's knowledge of anatomy is employed to think through the potential causes of the problem. A third approach is pathophysiologic, where the clinician uses his or her knowledge of physiology to think through the potential causes of the problem. A very common approach is pattern recognition, which is utilized by clinicians who have sufficient experience with the condition to recognize that a particular case fits it or does not. We can also use mnemonics, memory devices, that may have nothing to do with the content, but help us remember useful groupings. The mnemonic, P.T. Barnum loves kids, reminds us that the causes of cancer that spread to the bone include prostate, thyroid, breast, lung, and kidney. Clinicians also make use of heuristics, such as the old saying, "When you hear hoofbeats, look for horses, not zebras," which reminds us to always think of the common things first. Though not used formally, clinicians can make informal use of techniques based on Bayes' theorem, which can calculate the probability of a condition based on the findings that are present and the background probability of the condition. Finally, we can use the temporal pattern of illness to help us understand underlying pathophysiology. For example, the same symptoms occurring over moments are likely to be caused by a different process than symptoms which evolve over months. Here are two examples of systematic approaches to help us brainstorm to expand our differential diagnoses. On the left is the mnemonic vindicate, which helps us remember vascular, infectious, neoplastic, drug-induced, and other causes of disease. Within each category, we can think of subcategories or groups. For example, when we think of infectious diseases, we can consider viral diseases, bacterial diseases, parasitic, and fungal. These groupings take advantage of fundamental properties of human memory, enabling us to remember more individual items when they are grouped than we could remember in a simple list. On the right is another systematic approach, based not on the process, but on the organ system involved, such as neurologic diseases, diseases of the cardiovascular system, and diseases of the pulmonary system. Clinicians may use either or both of these approaches to help them think through a case when a comprehensive approach is needed. This slide shows a cross-section of the anatomy of the chest. It illustrates another approach to differential diagnosis, which is to use the underlying anatomy to help a clinician think of all the causes of a particular symptom or syndrome. For example, chest pain can be the result of a disorder in any of the structures depicted in the cross-section, from the skin to the esophagus to the windpipe. Simply by thinking through this anatomy, one can generate a fairly complete differential diagnosis of all the things that might cause chest pain. This slide illustrates how a differential diagnosis may be generated by recalling the underlying physiology. In this case, when evaluating a patient with jaundice, a clinician may recall all the steps in the formation of an excretion of bilirubin from hemoglobin in the red blood cells to the excretion of urobilinogen. By remembering all of the steps involved, a clinician can reconstitute a fairly complete differential diagnosis for this problem. More often, rather than a highly detailed differential diagnosis, clinicians will think in terms of the major groups: disorders of red blood cells, disorders of the liver, disorders of the gallbladder and biliary system. By thinking first in terms of these large groups, the clinician may then pursue further information to simplify the problem by eliminating entire categories of disease. Especially in neurologic diagnoses, clinicians use the topographic pattern, the temporal pattern, and the clinical context. The topographic pattern refers to mapping symptoms to the specific location in the brain or nervous system responsible for that function. In analyzing the temporal pattern, a clinician looks at the pace that symptoms appear, or resolve to understand the underlying pathophysiological process that might be causing the problem. Finally, the clinical context helps clinicians understand what non-neurologic process might be causing the condition. For example, a patient who has a fever is a little more likely to have an infection, while a patient with a comorbid illness such as valvular heart disease is more likely to have a heart condition as the cause, and a patient who smokes cigarettes is more likely to have cancer as the cause. This slide illustrates the use of topography in neurological diagnosis. On the left is a picture of the brain, showing the part of the brain that is responsible for motor function and sensory function. On the right is a cross-section of this area, which shows how sensation and movement of specific parts of the body are controlled by specific regions of the brain. We can correlate the patient's symptoms and signs on physical examination with the exact location of the nervous system which might be responsible for these symptoms. The same is true for diseases of the nervous system that occur outside of the brain, such as in the spinal cord. This slide shows how we use the temporal pattern of symptoms in neurologic diagnosis. Given an exact same set of symptoms, for example, numbness and weakness in the right arm and right side of the face, we can infer what kind of process might be involved by the pace at which these symptoms appear. Seizures, indicated in blue, are essentially an electric process and take place over a matter of minutes. When symptoms appear and then disappear within minutes, it may well have been a seizure. Vascular events, indicated in red, include stroke, transient ischemic attack, or migraine, and these generally take place over minutes to hours. The same symptoms, if they appear over many minutes or last several hours, may be due to a vascular process. If these symptoms go away entirely, it may be a transient ischemic attack. If symptoms persist indefinitely with permanent damage, then it is a stroke. When symptoms appear over many hours or days or even weeks, this suggests an infectious disease, indicated in orange. A brain abscess, for example, might cause the same numbness and tingling and weakness, but it evolves over several hours or days. If these same symptoms were to gradually appear over many months in a pattern of more or less relentless progression, then they may be due to a neoplasm or cancerous growth, indicated in green. Neurodegenerative diseases, indicated in dotted black, occur slowly over many months or years. An example would be amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Finally, some conditions are characterized by waxing and waning symptoms, superimposed on an underlying yet slowly progressive worsening. This suggests a disease such as multiple sclerosis, indicated in gray. We can see that neurologic diagnosis depends on combining the topography of the condition, indicating which part of the brain is involved, with the temporal pattern, which suggests what kind of process may be causing the trouble. Another approach commonly used by clinicians for more efficient diagnostic reasoning is to employ heuristics, or rules of thumb. Listed here are three. Err on the side of life, which suggests emphasizing those conditions which are most life-threatening or most conducive to treatment. When you hear hoofbeats, look for horses, not zebras, which, as we mentioned earlier, suggests that we think about the common diseases first, because they are much more likely to occur. And you're more likely to see an uncommon case of a common disease than an uncommon disease, which reminds us that even when it looks like we are seeing a rare condition, in terms of probability, it is more likely to be a common one. There are drawbacks to using heuristics in that they can lead to some cognitive errors and biases. However, their strengths provide a fast and frugal reference point, enabling us to get to an appropriate working diagnosis with a minimum of resources, including time and attention. Although not widely used in day-to-day clinical work, mathematical approaches to assist with diagnosis are employed informally in the clinic and formally in decision support systems and guidelines. Bayes' theorem has been widely employed to help determine the probability of a condition given its prevalence in the population and the findings present in a given patient. We use mnemonics to remind us that the specificity of a test tells us how useful it is for ruling a condition in, and the sensitivity of the test tells us how useful it is for ruling a condition out. The illustration on the right shows the mathematics of Bayes' theorem and an example of data for a given diagnostic test plotted in what is called a receiver operating characteristic curve. The curves in this analysis are beyond the scope of this lecture, but are worth pursuing to better understand how this kind of analysis can be used to enhance diagnosis. Mathematical approaches are also used to derive decision rules, which then become simple bedside rules for determining the likelihood of conditions. An example is the use of Wells' criteria for determining the likelihood of a pulmonary embolus or blood clot. Many clinicians use pocket calculators or online calculators to determine the Wells score in helping them decide whether to do further testing for pulmonary embolus. Similarly, there are simple scoring rules that can help us determine the probability of streptococcal pharyngitis or bacterial sinusitis, which can lead to more appropriate antibiotic prescribing. Finally, formal decision analysis is applied to clinical problems, not often in the clinic or at the bedside, but to set policy and create guidelines. These techniques are especially amenable to providing decision support with computer systems, since calculations which may be difficult to do on the fly in one's head are trivial for a computer if the correct data is available.